Forum. We're here to listen to some candidates in contested races for the spring April 7th, 2020 election for the Racine City Council. And my name is Laura Sumner-Kuhn, and I'm your moderator this evening, and I'm delighted that we have some candidates with us. We're going to start this evening with our candidate in the 8th District race. The 8th District of Racine covers like West Central Racine area, and there are two contenders for that seat, both new to the seat. The incumbent is not running for re-election, and so unfortunately we had Marcus West, who is running for that seat, who declined to be with us tonight, but we are delighted that Mac Platt is here this evening. Mac was born in Chicago but moved to Racine as a toddler. He's called Southeastern Wisconsin his home now for more than 30 years. He has a background in quality engineering and secondary education, and he graduated from Kenosha Unified Schools, and he's had some college background. He and his family live just a few steps, he says, from the Corrine Reed Owens Transit Center in the heart of the city. And he says he has decided to run for alderman to be a true representative of the citizens of the 8th District, as well as an independent voice on the council. And he ran against QA Shakur, who had held this seat until he decided not to run for re-election. So, Mac, we're delighted to have you with us. You talk about being in a few steps away from the Owens Transit Center. Mm-hmm. Some people might look at that area saying, this is one of the most depressed areas of the city that we might have. But yet, I'm wondering if you could tell us what wonderful community assets you see in that part of the district that you think that you can build upon.
Well, there is a church in the middle of the city, right in my district, Greater Grace Temple Church of God in Christ, and they've had a vision for several years now of opening a community center that would be community-oriented to serve the citizens, not only of the 8th District, but of the city in its entirety. You have a lot of individuals who've been in the city for 40, 50, 60 years that live in my district who see the great potential, not only in the district, but also in the city. It's just that certain things have been neglected at the city and state level, also the national level, if you ask me. And so I feel like it would be my duty and an honor to get that attention focused back on this district so that we can become the great area that we once were. In my district, we have the old Hamilton Beach campus, you know, that was a great employer in the city of Racine. You've got Racine's rich history, over 250 different manufacturers that made Racine worldwide famous. And, you know, we have that great potential to build back up to that again. And so I'm going to make that my duty to try and bring us there again.
For people who may not be familiar, can you describe the area where Hamilton Beach used to be? And some of the areas that you're talking about that had that manufacturing heritage that mm-hmm. we revere in the city?
Yes, well, Hamilton Beach used to be located on Memorial Drive between High Street and Rapids Drive, and on the east side of Memorial Drive. And now that is a sprawling campus that is open for a lot of other individuals to lease space for their business. We've got the Horlick Field, which is kitty corner from that campus. We've had a crane company, which is right abutting to the Horlick Field. We have the Azarian site, which is right across from High Street from the old Hamilton Beach area campus. Actually, in that campus, we used to have O&H Bakery until they moved their operations out into Mount Pleasant on Washington Avenue. And so, you know, just right in that little area, we have, you know, rich history of great manufacturers. And, you know, you go down, you know, a couple more blocks, and you've got, you know, other manufacturers that had made their name famous in the city of Racine as well. So the 8th District has a lot of rich history. Unfortunately, things have taken a turn and, you know, they've left, but we want to make Racine such that you have businesses as such to want to come back.
How do you think you can effectually do that as a city policymaker?
Well, one of the first things we want to do is get government out of the way. People are very innovative. They're very creative. And if they're given the liberty to create and innovate, they will do just that. People have their finger on the pulse of what's going on in their immediate area and, you know, circles around that and so on and so forth, whereas government tends to be a little behind the times when it comes to businesses. When the government has finally decided what it will do, oftentimes they're 5 or 10 years behind, you know, behind schedule. Whereas when business owners, individual contractors, different people like that, you know, they're able to innovate immediately. You know, they see what's going on, they can change course, they can upgrade, they can update. And so when you give the people or leave them in liberty to innovate and create, they'll do just that. And the small business owners will be the ones to build things back up again.
That's an interesting area, the 8th District, because it's a real mixture of manufacturing space and zoning, a little bit of retail, but a lot of residential in between. Mm-hmm. How do you protect the residents of that area of the district who might be beside these manufacturing areas that could see some growth and yet give freedom to the innovators? What kinds of policies and mindset do you think you have to have as a city alderman to protect both constituencies?
Well, the mindset you must have is one of a representative, a true representative. So I represent the interests and needs of those who are the residents and business owners of the district. So those individuals and businesses that are already there, I need to draw on their point of view first. Since they're there, they're the ones who would be affected. You know, they're the ones who I would want to base my policy on. So if there's something, an environmental concern, a noise concern, or what have you, I would want to get that feedback from my residents first before I would decide which way I would vote regarding any piece of legislation or any policy that would come before me.
Mm-hmm. Are there any potential people in the works that you've been speaking with that look to do something in your district now?
Well, I've been in talk, you know, in conversation with the pastor of Greater Grace Temple regarding getting their community center up and running, what they need, you know, things that they are lacking, so on and so forth. I have spoken with several residents in the district. It's not so much that they're concerned about businesses per se. They just want to make sure that government gets back to doing the things that it was charged with doing, you know, garbage collection, you know, safety, things of that nature.
And what about the families that are in your district? What can you give us an idea of what you think that they're looking for from the city?
Honesty, openness, transparency, integrity.
Where do you think that when they bring up these issues, where do you think that they're that has been lacking? I get the feeling that you're suggesting that. Can you give us a brief example?
I've had several individuals in the 8th District make it known to me that they have for several years, one constituent said for 4 years he had been trying to get a hold of the current incumbent with no luck. The phone calls will ring and then go to voicemail, and then the voicemail is full. Or sometimes it may not be full, and they leave a voicemail and they never receive a return phone call.
So availability might be an issue.
Yes, and you know, oftentimes, well, they'll tell me that they only will see the incumbent around election time, and other than that, they don't really see him anymore unless they go to a council meeting and they don't really get to speak with him.
So you have about a second of the show to wrap up a little bit about why somebody in the 8th District should choose Mac Platt for their representation.
Well, just like you had pointed out, someone who would be a true representative of the people and an independent voice on the council.
Thank you so much, Matt. Yeah. I wish you good luck with election time coming up, and we will now turn to our next district contest. And that will be Henry Perez, who is running for the 12th District Council seat. The 12th District covers Racine's West Side. He is running against Stacy Shepherd, who could not be here this evening. Stacy is a challenger and Henry is the incumbent. Stacy's a lifelong resident of Racine, and she says that her concerns are about the city's sustainability. She's looking to help reduce its carbon footprint and help sustain green spaces. She's on the city park and rec board, and she has a concern also about supporting the community health center that's proposed for the Julian Thomas School. That's a city project within the school, and she's hoping that somehow, if she were elected, she would help to make Racine more inclusive and welcoming in the community for everyone. She challenges the incumbent, Henry Perez, who was first elected to the council in 2013. He serves in the Public Works and Services Committee and is also a cemetery commissioner. He has previously served in the Public Safety Committee and in the Finance and Personnel Committee, as well as being a commissioner on the Community Development Board. Henry also served the county as a member of the Human Services Board. He moved to Racine in 2005 to be the youth and outreach pastor at the Christian Reformed Church, and he currently serves as the associate pastor at Kenosha Christian Reformed Church, and he's the minister of church safety and security. He's a retired Florida police sergeant and state attorney investigator who now teaches at Racine Unified. So welcome, Henry. How are you this evening?
Thank you, Laura. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good. Well, Henry, when we talk about some of the issues in the city and those that have been recently undertaken by the mayor and the council as a whole, there are some interesting new initiatives. The Community Health Initiative that's currently proposed for Julian Thomas School, the new sustainability officer that Corey Mason has brought in to help lessen the carbon footprint of the city. How do you see some of these initiatives working and progressing for the city? Where do you stand on that?
Well, that's a great question. We need to understand that we have to balance our economic needs with the needs of the community. And having a sustainability coordinator is a great way to start. As a pastor, I believe that we are to care for creation, the birds of the heavens, the fish of the sea, and over all the living creatures upon the earth and upon the people as well. So I think we're taking steps in the right directions. My concern is that we're not, and one of the concerns I brought up when we were first discussing this is, how do we economically sustain these issues when we have so many other greater economic issues in the community? So that's a challenge that we're facing. I believe the project is good. It has a good aim. I'm all for it. But we also have to balance it with how are we going to finance it, because everything costs. And we have to be better stewards of the resources that we have from the community. But we also have to be better stewards of the money, the taxes we collect from the people, because that's their biggest complaint. Every time I talk to people, they go, Henry, we're going to lower our taxes. And the taxes are high, and that's true. And for the city that's only 80,000 people, a lot of people are complaining, and that's an issue that we have to balance. We have to be carefully progressing forward, but it needs to be a balanced approach.
Racine faces some difficulties compared to its neighbors, Caledonia and Mount Pleasant. It's rather landlocked. Mm-hmm. What are your ideas, and what ideas have you supported for economic development within the city confines?
Well, one of the things that I've always said is that Racine needs to be a destination city. When I moved here in 2013, I had really never heard of Racine before, but I love it. Coming from Miami, it's got wonderful restaurants, amazing historical things that you can do. I mean, we're not only a museum city, but we have we're on the lake. I mean, our resources are amazing in our city. And so one of the things that I've constantly tried to support is downtown development, because it does need to be a focus of our community. We also take into consideration that how are we going to get the people there? And, you know, we have a lot of hobby shops that are not open late after 5 or so. So those are some of the issues that we keep trying to address. The construction that's going on downtown, it's good, but we have to recognize that we've made an investment now. It's going to cost us money, but it'll pay off 20 years down the road when their current TID is over, for example. And so all these issues are very important. If you notice the signs that are now, when you come into the city, the Frank Lloyd Wright design signs, that was my idea many years ago, with the idea of bringing people into the city, helping them recognize that this is an amazing place to be. And so there's a lot of development, and that's the only way our taxes are going to be able to go down because of state law. We're landlocked, so we don't have an opportunity to expand. And we have an intergovernmental fund that comes from basically the sewers that we have set out to the other cities, which is going to run out in about 13 years. So we need to keep all these issues in mind as we move forward. It's not easy. It's a challenge because we have present-day challenges. But economic development has to be the key to be able to sustain us. We're slowly getting builders that want to come into our community. And if we can continue to do that, that will dramatically lower our tax base. And at that point, hopefully, at one point, we'll be able to even lower the taxes and make our community a destination, which is really key to helping us grow.
There's a kind of a tension between offering enough incentive for there to be ample economic development in the heart of the city, yet without giving away too many incentives and a delay for the tax return to the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. How do you think Racine has fared so far in that balance?
We have not done a good job. Unfortunately, we've had several projects that we've developed over time that have not worked out.
Can you give me some examples?
The Water Street project is the biggest one that we can think of. We were going to have a boardwalk type area. That's not happening anymore. We're actually being sued in that process.
That was the Azarian project?
The Azarian project, mm-hmm. Right. And so as we look at some of the issues and some of the developments that the mayors have proposed and said we're going to do this, many of them haven't worked out. The details have been difficult to work. Some of it has to do even with the DNR, with how deep the sewers can go and all these other issues. If you're going to build on the land, it's close to the lake or the river, a lot of issues. So we need to be real careful. We have a responsibility in city government to look to the future, but also respect the needs of the community currently. I don't think we've done a good job of that. And I think that as we continue to move forward, I'm never afraid to ask the questions and I'm never afraid to challenge the answers. And we need to say, hey, we need to give value to the people now, looking forward to the future, and create a balance. It is a challenge, I'll be honest with you. And development, I think, is one of those keys. And yes, the payoff may be in 20 years, and it might cost us a little bit more now. And that has to do a lot with the TIDs and TID creations and how that works. And so right now, I think we actually have too many TIDs. And that's costing our community a lot of money, because the way a TID works is that the money that's invested in the taxes goes to that particular, gets reinvested in that area. The community doesn't take advantage of it, but the community has to pay because of the development. So it's almost like a double taxation for a little while. And unfortunately, a lot of these TIDs are 20 years old. And so we have to balance the needs of the community financially. We have to be fiscally responsible. We have to be good stewards. That's really been a challenge, but development is really the only way we can increase what we do in the community. So we have to figure out what's the best way to do it.
Looking back at what had happened in the past for some of those TID districts that were created, what would you have done differently in hindsight?
Well, here's what I've come to learn after time. The information that we were given by the city attorney's office or by the speakers that were presenting the information wasn't always complete. And because it wasn't always complete, we were always asked to vote quickly. Look, we need this vote now because construction needs to start soon. And I've learned over time not to do that, not to vote now, because we're not getting all the information. Just recently, the TIDs were better explained to us, and we came to recognize that we're being double taxed, and we'd never realized before that when we were creating TIDs, because they said it's not going to cost us any money because the money gets reinvested in the community. So those are some of the issues that, looking back, better information from the people that are responsible to us as city aldermen would have been, would have helped us make more responsible decisions.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Other than the economic development portion of city governance that we've just talked about, what is it that you hope to accomplish? If you could just give us a final maybe 2 minutes of why somebody should vote for you in the 12th district.
Why someone should vote for me? Well, I believe in being a good steward of the resources that we've been given. I believe in being a servant leader. I respond to the community needs. Fortunately for me, I live in a great district. The 12th district is the beginning of the city. We have fantastic parks. We have a hospital. We have a cemetery. We have three public schools, one private school. We have several churches. And it's probably the safest of all the neighborhoods. And as a former police officer, I think safety is very important for our community. Economic development is very important for our community. I believe that we need to attract people to the city with our development, with our resources, the way we treat people equitably. And we need to recognize that this needs to be a safe and welcoming city with emphasis on strong economic development, which contributes opportunity and value. And I think I can bring that. I've been bringing that all along, and that's why I want to continue serving. I've already made a difference in the 7 years that I've been an alderman, and that's evident. And I'm told that many times after discussions when I make my point and I give a counterpoint, many people change their votes because they recognize that there needs to be a balance. And so that's why I believe I can be the better candidate, the better alderman, and that's what I would appreciate, your vote.
Well, great. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with us tonight, Henry Perez, the incumbent of District 12. We wish you good luck as you head into these final weeks of the campaign. And we'll switch our conversation now to the 4th District, which is the South Central side of Racine, where the former Alderwoman Tracy Laren resigned in November, citing health issues and a new job that would make it unable to fulfill her role as city alderman. So we have two newcomers who are facing off in the 4th district. One of them is Edwin Santiago. He was born and raised in Chicago and moved to Kenosha to attend UW Parkside. And while he was there, he began his civic engagement as a college student, where he joined a fraternity and he focused on community service. He and his frat members created the Young Knights program, which paired middle school students with college-age mentors who worked with them through high school graduation. The group created lasting bonds and made an impact on children from disenfranchised communities. In 2012, Edwin and his wife bought several properties in Racine, and it's through that process that he decided to pursue a general contracting license, and he now operates a contracting business and has networked with local realtors and other small business owners throughout the city. Unfortunately, Edwin isn't able to be with us tonight because he's having an inspection of one of his general contracting projects, and so he knew it might run late. But his opponent, Dennis Monty, who's also running in the 4th District, is here with us this evening. Also kind of in the same, some of the same work. He's a retired master electrician and a union contractor. Four generations of his family have lived in the 4th District, so he knows it well. He was raised in the district and worked some of his very first jobs right in the district. For years, he has actively been involved in local politics, either by campaigning for other candidates or he has worked to address issues, particularly of crime and drugs and the problem with blighted and distressed properties in the district. He lost his bid for alderman in 2018 at the last election, but he regularly attends neighborhood watch and council meetings. He opposed the once proposed arena project for downtown. He currently is the president of the Racine Taxpayers Association. He's a member of the Council for Black Male Achievement, a former member of the Racine Interfaith Coalition, block captain for the 900 block of Marquette Street, and chairman of the Board of Trustees for his church. So good evening, Dennis. We're so glad you could join us this evening.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Some of the things that I think are happening in the 4th District are very interesting, and one of them that comes to my attention is the enactment and the beginning process of the new rents program that was part of the 2020 budget for the city. And the rents program is an approach, hopefully, to increase the quality of the housing stock throughout the city and in targeted areas, and many of those areas also reside in the 4th District where you are campaigning.
Yes.
Well, what's your opinion of the rents program as far as you know?
Well, I'll tell you, the city enacted a program probably about 10 to 15 years ago where they were going to do inspections of the properties when the tenants changed. So in other words, they would come in and inspect the properties prior to them being rented out. That never happened. They never followed through with the plan. So on one hand, I'm glad that they're finally creating a program that they're actually going to get behind and do something about. Now, I'm an independent, and I tend to take the best of all three parties. I tend to lean a little on the libertarian side. So I am concerned that our property rights are being negated to do these inspections. Tenants certainly have the right to make complaints where they're living. Certainly there are external factors that are readily visible on drive-by inspections. I see this not only good to increase the quality of the housing stock, but I'm also concerned that this may be intended to be just a revenue-generating program.
Okay, so let's stop a little bit so we can clarify a couple of things. Even while you may be an independent, all of the city council seats are nonpartisan. So all of these races are nonpartisan, but from your philosophical background, you're saying you're an independent. But these are nonpartisan races, just to be clear, so that we can clarify that for our listeners.
And might I add, though, that at one time, all the aldermen were nonpartisan. You could run for alderman by being familiar with your neighbors, and they elected you based on their familiarity with you. unfortunately, heavy partisanship has taken place in all of the council seats in our administration. So right now there is a supermajority of one party on our council. And I think any good legislative body needs to have some balance so that all people are represented, not just one side. And that's why I'm running as an independent. And I would like to see more independent people running so that their first responsibility and allegiance is to the people that live in the neighborhood and not to donors or to a party.
And could you tell us a little bit about what makes you think that that's the case? What kinds of policies would you like to see that would be more reflective of that balance that you're talking about, or projects?
Well, I think that I would like to see people who are running for office run on the merits, their own merits, and not on their identification with the party. And what we see is in the mayor's office, one of his office people is actually running the campaign for an opponent to one of the sitting aldermen. The party takes very active roles in all of these elections. I think that gives a very unfair advantage over a person who is not connected to a party. To someone who is running because they want to run and serve their community rather than a party.
And what would you do if you were elected? What kinds of things are important to you?
Well, I'll tell you. I've been serving my community in a variety of ways. I've always lived a life of service. Before I lost the last election, I had already been active in our district, particularly staying in contact with the neighbors, visiting the residents, helping to turn our neighborhood around. I was able, through working with the Metro Drug Unit, to close a drug house. I've worked with the unit inspection team to clean up some distressed properties, get rid of abandoned cars. Through Neighborhood Watch, we were able to take Marquette Park and get lights installed, put no parking signs out in front, and turn the park over back to the kids rather than prostitutes and drug dealers and gambling. If fact, I had a lady today. I had given a report on my Facebook page. I'd been out again in the neighborhood in the lull during these campaigns, and I had taken pictures and followed up on some of the concerns and complaints that some of the residents had while I was out campaigning. And I conveyed those to the unit, and as a result, we had seven actions were taken by the unit on some boarded up properties, some distressed properties, some abandoned cars, an illegal business. And I reported that, and I says, I don't do it because it's a job. I do it because my heart is in our community. You know, I grew up there. I went to schools there. I worked there. And one of my followers came back and said, Dennis, that's what I love about you, because you truly care about the people in the district, unlike other aldermen that we've had.
What kind of, can you give us an idea of what kind of families live in your district and what kind of needs that they might have?
I see our neighborhood, it's a very multicultural neighborhood. When I went to school, it was not a segregated neighborhood. We went to neighborhood schools, so my playmates, my classmates, the people that I worked with, the people that I lived next door to, were all races, all colors, all religions, and we didn't see color, and I don't see color. My mission is to represent all people. And what I've seen is it has become slightly segregated. We have a lot of poor and undereducated people in our neighborhoods. And I think that we need to try to turn that around. Part of it is the joblessness in our city. We have people that are undereducated because they were either truant from school, didn't finish schooling, and because they did not have good role models. There are a lot of single-parent households in our district, and in fact, there are grandparents and aunts and uncles who are raising kids because the parents didn't meet up to their challenges. So what I would like to see is some mentoring programs. Some of that is done through Neighborhood Watch and our neighborhood policing programs, where the kids get to spend time with the police officers and others in the neighborhood and be given a positive role model. So I would like to see that continued, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a city program. I think what we can do is we can get people from the churches, we can get people from the neighborhoods, people who are good role models, have been successful in life, and help them to mentor, to tutor these kids so that they feel that there is an opportunity for them to succeed. And then I think the same thing can be done from a business point of view. We've got a lot of shuttered businesses in our neighborhood. There are tons of storefronts that are just either boarded up or blank, and they're very good opportunities for small family businesses to pop up. But a lot of people have never been in business before. No one in their family has ever been in business before, so they don't understand the intricacies of having a business. You know, paying the taxes, having a budget, understanding all the, you know, the rules and the regulations that they need to abide by, and doing a good business plan so that they can be successful in what they're doing. And so I would like to get some of the credit unions, the banks, some of our successful business leaders to get involved with holding some clinics and helping people to be successful. And I think once we can do that and people can start having some pride and self-achievement, I think then you're going to see the whole status of the neighborhoods being lifted up.
Again, Dennis, I just ask you to have maybe one more minute about why somebody, when they go to the voting booth on April 7th, should check the mark the box next to your name.
Well, again, because I have been so active in our neighborhood, you know, we were poorly served by the last alderman. People want to know that their voice is heard at the council level, and there are actions that have been taken to keep people from being heard at the council. You know, they've had the access ordinance, which prevents people from having any actions taken unless they get 250 signatures, which is 50 more than you need to run for office, which I think is ludicrous. I'm working in the neighborhood. I'm not doing it because I'm getting paid. I'm not doing it because I'm elected. All it does is validate the work that I've done and give me a voice on the council for those people.
Great. Well, thank you, and I wish you good luck as you head to the final weeks of your campaign.
And now we'll move to the 10th district race. The 10th district is on the city's southeast side, and incumbent Carrie Glenn is running for re-election against her opponent, Sam Peet. Sam wasn't able to be here this evening, but Carrie is here, and she has lived in the 10th district for more than 20 years. She's a former property manager of 12 shops shopping centers in Illinois and Wisconsin, including Elmwood Plaza. She was elected alderwoman in the last election, April of 2018, and she looks to win a second term in office. She counts among her council successes her ability to stop the construction of a fire station at Case Harmon Park, which she said would have been illegal. She worked with neighbors in and outside of the 10th District to halt a concrete batch plant from being built south of the district and a concrete smashing plant east of the 10th District. She rallied neighbors to get involved in the redesign of Case Harmon Park. She currently serves on the Public Safety and Licensing Committee. She's a lifelong resident of the city of Racine, as she has been on the board of directors of Fourth Fest for Greater Racine Incorporated for 14 years. So welcome, Carrie.
Thank you.
So it sounds as though sound development is something that is of great import to you in the 10th District. Maybe you can describe for some of our listeners exactly where the 10th District is, other than my generic southeast side of Racine.
Sure. Our boundaries run 21st Street, down going east, South Memorial Drive. We go down Chicory Road. There's not really a street there, but there's the bike path. The bike path up to West Boulevard, little down Taylor, and then hit 21st Street again. So, and it's in that area. There's Mount Pleasant also, but that's just the best way to describe it. It's the southeast corner of the city of Racine.
And what do you see as the emerging issues that are in your district?
There's not any direct emerging issues. Right now we're dealing with the reconstruction of Highway 11. That's just started 2 weeks ago. It's been quite a challenge, but I'm trying to keep all my neighbors informed on what exactly is going to be going on a weekly basis. I put out a weekly post on my Facebook page, a weekly update of what's going to be happening in the week to come. And it's just, I want them to see the light at the end of the tunnel. The 10th District is going to have the nicest street in the city of Racine, and I am so excited for that. But I know we're going to have to put up with a lot for the next 6 months, but I think in the end it's just going to be make our district even better.
And I think you have also a district that has a very interesting mix of residential that abuts right up against some retail and some commercial areas. And that can be rather tricky to manage. You have an industrial park in the area as well. So how is it that you're able to keep concerns of your residents and potential business owners in check? How do you manage that balance? What do you see happening there?
I think I do very well. If there's an issue with a commercial property, I will go right there and talk to them. One of the issues was semi-trucks coming into, you know, the neighborhood, not taking the main roads, the dump trucks. I go right to the businesses and say, hey, these are my neighbors' concerns. What can we do about it? So I work, even with my neighbors in my district, I work directly with them. If they call me, I really like to go and see them like I do the commercial businesses. I want to let them know this is residential and we want to keep it that way. So I go right to the source. And if it's pictures that need to be taken, I think some of the people down at City Hall are like, oh no, here's an email for Carrie. There's a whole bunch of attachments. She's got a ton of pictures. But I want them to see right away what we're dealing with.
You also have some spots that are kind of ripe for redevelopment in that area that seem to be open. What do you think the city ought to be doing for those places?
You know, we don't really want to see redevelopment. It's a nice, quiet area. The area that we do have, it's a buffer between the commercial, like to the south of us. It's a buffer. So it's not noisy or anything like that. It's just a nice little buffer. And that's, I can't imagine if something were to come up, because it's been this way for so long that I'll have to deal with it. It does come up, but right now we like that buffer.
Yeah, somebody might press you and say, you know, the city is landlocked. There's very little room for growth somewhere. But if they could increase some areas that have some space or a zone for manufacturing or zone for some commercial property, we ought to be taking a look at. And I'm thinking of that stretch kind of around Memorial Drive and Taylor and 16th Street there. Would you be adverse to having economic development focused on that area?
Absolutely not. Just not a concrete batch plant or a concrete crushing plant. That's something we don't want, and those are the only things that have come up with those areas.
Okay. If somebody is going to the polls on the 7th and they're a voter in the 10th district, why should they vote for you?
Because I have been their voice, and I will continue to be their voice. I'm hands-on. Like I said, I right away get out there, take pictures. I keep them informed on what's going on, and I listen to them. I truly, really do listen to them. It's not just my vote. It's my neighbor's vote that I work for each and every time.
Thank you so much for sharing your ideas with us today.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And tonight we thank you for tuning in to our Facebook Live Racine City Council Election Forum. You will be able to hear a recording of this show at 11:15 on March 21st when it will be aired again as the Community Matters show on that day. And also the show will be archived. So we've heard a smattering of thoughts from candidates who are in contested races for the Racine City Council tonight, and we thank you for taking time to be with us.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Today's programming was recorded before the COVID-19 national crisis.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more is available 24 hours a day on your desktop, laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org, where you can listen live, online, 24 hours a day. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz WGTD HD2 is available via HD radio. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
WGTD's Morning Show. Insightful questions put each week to the nation's top authors.
Those are great questions. It always makes for a better interview, for at least for the author, when the interviewer has actually read the book.
You're such a good interviewer. My gosh.
You really made me think. You really read the book. Yeah.
No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought some really great points.
Greg Berg hosts the Morning Show weekdays after the 8 o'clock news, only on WGTD. WGTD's Noon Tunes is where we highlight and celebrate the local musical talent here in southeastern Wisconsin by playing their music for you.
Wanna make you laugh, wanna make you smile. And I'll bet you that you don't know you drive me wild.
If you are a local musician and you have a CD or MP3 of your professionally recorded songs, we'd like to hear from you and get you a new tune.
Pearl, pearl, come let us see our girl.
So call me, Dave McGrath, at 564-3880 or email me at mcgrathd@gtc.edu. We'll talk and we'll get you on the air.
Summer wind came blowing in.
You feature a song by a local artist on Noon Tunes at the end of every WGTD midday newscast. Be listening then.
And walk with me.
24/7 Jazz HD2 is available on your smartphone. For jazz, big band, and blues, go to the App Store and download the free WGTD app. HD2 is still available on your desktop at WGTD.org and in the Kenosha Racine area on your HD radio. The Gateway Radio Reading Service is for visually impaired listeners who would like to have newspapers and books read to them. In the Kenosha Racine area, easy-to-operate radios are available free of charge. Visit WGTD.org or call 564-3744.
Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and Classical Music.